This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Hey, welcome to it. This is the next edition of the Kona Edge. I am still Brad Brown, coming to you from a very hot and sunny Cape Town in South Africa. And this is the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying and racing on the Big Island in Kona, Hawaii. And coming up on today's show, I get to share another one of those incredible age group stories. And you'll get to hear from Jody Browning today's podcast. And I must tell you, today's been one of those weird days because I have just been so super busy. It's the first day that I haven't this year that I haven't been able to get a training session in, so I'm hoping to squeeze a run in as soon as I've done this. But I've got a ton of work to do, taking on some client work, but besides that, I'm so excited because I've been mentioning here on the podcast that I'm working on something that I can't wait to share with you. I've been obviously training hard, so my mindset is in a good place. I've been just riding my bike lots and seeing some cool places. I've been taking some photos that I've been sharing on social media. If you haven't checked them out yet, just look for the Kona Edge across the various platforms. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But things are moving along quite nicely. I'm super amped to be able to share with you what we are working on. And I can't just do it yet. It's almost like it's difficult to describe. I feel like a kid at Christmas, but I can't let the cat out of the bag because we're not quite done yet. So it's coming. I'm super excited, and I hope you are going to be too, because I think it is awesome what we have planned for later on this year. And it's not going to be too long to wait. I will be sharing some behind the scenes sneak peeks on those social media accounts as well. If you want to have a look, look us up, okay? It is The Kona Edge across the various platforms. So you can find us, as I said, on Facebook, Twitter, and the Instagram. Enough about me yakking. Let's get into today's podcast. Today's Coach's Corner is brought to you by Doug Guthrie Personal Training. Doug has a passion for seeing people improve and succeed. A 14 times Ironman finisher, two of those on the Big Island, a USA T-Level 1 certified coach, head coach of the YMCA tri-team, Doug has the unique ability to meet athletes wherever they are in their journey. His motivation comes from helping athletes improve and meet their goals at any skill level. As a self-coach, two times Kona qualifier and finisher, Doug's experience places him in the shoes of those training for their first sprint, to those who need to know what has to be adjusted in their plan to get them to the next level in order to qualify for the World Championships. Discover more about Doug, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. And don't forget, if you're a coach or if you have a coaching business and would like to get a plug on the podcast, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. Head to Australia now, in the middle of Queensland, to catch up with Jody Browning. Jody, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Brad, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Jody, we chat to triathletes from around the world, and many of them are in big cities, and you are far from a big city. You're in a pretty rural town, 2,500 people. It's a great place to live, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a great place to live. It's a great place to train for triathlon in a different kind of a way. So what we lack in expertise, we have in open spaces and no traffic lights and no people trying to run us off the road as a cyclist. So there are benefits to everything.
Absolutely. And I guess you've always got to look on the bright side. I mean, being in a big place, you can have tons of training partners, but in a small town, not too many. But as you say, there are advantages. Tell me a little bit about, if we take a step back, how you got into the sport of triathlon. Were you pretty active growing up? Have you always been sporty?
I've always been sporty. I have been predominantly a swimmer, which is an advantage I appreciate for triathlon, but had never been a biker, and running had been restricted to cross-country at school. But I'd always been quite competitive in cross-country, and particularly in swimming. So, yes, but I fell into triathlon quite accidentally. I was recreationally swimming for fitness at the pool, and my current coach, who I've had basically since the beginning of my tri endeavours, and was simply looking for a training partner. So it went from there. He approached me and asked me if I would like to swim with him. And at the time, it's a bit of a funny story because I said I was too frightened to say no, actually. But he was, I thought that I would give it a go and see how I went. And in my mind, I was thinking it's going to be too hard. So if it's too hard, then I'll just start swimming at different times so I don't have to see him anymore. But it was, it ended up being one of the best things that's happened to me, actually. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity.
And that is in the town you live in now. I mean, you were saying your coach, before we started recording, has done multiple Ironmans himself. So even though it is a small town, there is a little triathlon community that's growing and budding in the town.
Yeah, David was probably the original person who had been doing Ironman at the time, and that's how I fell into it. And since then, there have been a couple of others who've jumped on board and have undertaken sport in various levels, so Olympic distance, half and the full Ironman. So there's probably between 5 and 10 of us out here who do the different legs at any one time.
In that's with you growing up in the swimming, were you, I mean, you mentioned being competitive. Did you swim at any sort of representative level? Were you any good at it?
Yeah, I was regionally competitive. I never swam at state level. So, but, you know, I would swim every single day, sometimes twice a day, and every weekend pretty much in our swimming season was taken up with carnival. So I was definitely regionally competitive. But that said, our region is quite a small region, so it's not city competitive, if that clarifies things.
Yeah. You also, I mean, Australia is very much like South Africa. We all very sporty and very active and outdoorsy. Was it just swimming, or did you partake in other sports as well, or was that it?
Oh, no, like you say, it was basically everything. That's what we did, particularly in a small town. So I was also competitive in regional representative in touch football and netball and basketball, so three team sports as well, yeah.
Which is very different to triathlon. As much as a lot of people train together on race day, it's all you. Do you prefer the individual sort of side of triathlon? Is the team sort of camaraderie aspect of team sports something you miss?
No, the team camaraderie I appreciate, and it certainly has its place. And I know some people really enjoy that part of life, but I appreciate the solo training, and I'm not quite sure if that comes from my personality or whether it comes from swimming for so long, which is very similar to triathlon in that you have your swim, you know, your teammates for swimming, but it's all up to you. And the training can be really quite lonely with your head stuck in the water the whole time.
It's interesting you talk about that, because a lot of people struggle with the training for an Ironman. So they find a group to train with, and it's very social and get out there with your friends, and it's coffee rides. But on race day in an Ironman, as you say, it's you and you inside your own head. Do you think you've got a bit of an advantage being where you are and training the way you do come race day?
Yeah, I've often thought that. I do think I have an advantage. Because I really do enjoy my own company. And when I say I train solo, I do largely train solo. My coach is my training partner in the pool, and there's a couple of others who I occasionally train with. When I'm out in the road on the bike and sometimes on the run, we will catch up and connect for parts of the ride and parts of the run, but usually it's solo. And I really appreciate that on lots of levels. It clears my head. You know, helps me sort out my day, gives me something to think about, helps me focus on technique. So there are lots of advantages to training on your own, and I don't find it lonely, no.
Jenny, talk to me a little bit about, I mean, we spoke about how you got into the sport and it started by training. Your sort of first introduction to triathlon, tell me a little bit about your first race and wrapping your head around three sports as opposed to one.
My first race was quite interesting, actually. I did an Olympic distance race. So after my swimming, I said to my coach, you know, do you do training plans? Would you do one for me? And he had one by the end of the day. So I was kind of stuck then, and I started from there. So I did an Olympic distance, and bonked nutritionally, and swore when I finished that I would never ever do it again. And then, as you do, as an Ironman will appreciate this, you get to the end of the day, and you forget all about bonking on the run, and you think, you know, I'm going to do another one because that wasn't so bad. So I finished that, and then decided my next one would be a half. So we went from there.
I love it. And was it a natural progression to go and do the full, or did you? I mean, was it? Did you think to yourself, "This is mad. Why am I even thinking about doing these long things?"
I think in the back of my mind is that I'd always wanted to do the endurance events. I think I'm well suited to endurance. I don't have any fast twitch. I have a lot of slow twitch. So very suited to the endurance side of things. And I didn't really get a kick out of the shorter stuff. I don't think that it's long enough for me to get that satisfaction of having challenged myself significantly. I think that's okay if you're a fast twitch guy and you can really push yourself and race really hard. But that's not who I am. I think the slow twitch. So it was a natural progression, but it was pretty frightening for me to put my hand up and do my first one. That certainly wasn't an easy decision to make.
Mm. Jody, as far as once you're in it and staying in it, how long have you been around the sport now? I mean, I was chatting to somebody just yesterday about burnout and almost going gung-ho and all excited, but two or three seasons down the line, absolutely hating it. Have you been around the sport for a while now?
I have been in the sport. Well, I did my first Olympic distance in 2013, and I think I did my first half in 2014 and my first full in 2014, I think. So I haven't been in the sport for very long at all, in terms of, you know, so I know some people now are starting really quite young in Olympic distance and then working their way up into the long course stuff. I absolutely love it. It is something that I'm not even close to burning out on, and it's something that actually helps me in everyday life now. So it's just become a part of what I do. I really enjoy it on a lot of levels. So no burnout for me yet, but I did start relatively late.
I was going to ask, do you wish you had started earlier?
No, my coach often reflects that he wishes he'd possibly started a little bit earlier, but for me, the timing worked when I started. I think it was just a bit of serendipity that my coach, you know, was looking for a training partner on that particular day. It allowed me to start this this journey, I guess, when my children were a little bit older. They were still quite young. But by the time I started doing the long course stuff, I was able to fit my training in around them a little bit more rather than having young babies. So, no, I think the timing was perfect for me, and I'm really grateful. And I'm also really excited now that I'm still young enough to be making progress, but appreciating the mental side that comes into it. And I think that you get a little bit of wisdom as you get older and you get some patience, and that becomes an advantage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You said to me when we were chatting while setting up the interview that you almost feel that the sport and Ironman has been a lifesaver for you, that it's just really helped you in all aspects. Tell me a little bit about that.
It definitely has. So I've managed anxiety pretty much all of my life, and once I was very competitive at school, as you say, academically as well as sporting, and it got to a point where it just got pretty much too much for me. So for about 20 years, I did everything I could to avoid any type of competition whatsoever. Still enjoyed my life and I was really quite content, but I didn't compete in sport, and any exercise I did was simply at home and quite personal. So when I started this sport, it was really something that created some anxiety in me again, but it made me see that in order to live a really full life, you need to fail and you need to put yourself out there and you need to try new things. And this sport is a really it's a personal sport. It's something you can make growth in every single training session and every single race. There's always something that you can do better than what you did yesterday. So that's become my focus. And now I'm really happy to fail and make mistakes because I know that it's actually quite exciting. There's something else you can learn about yourself from that. So it's really been a metaphor for life for me, and it's taught myself and my children so many things about resilience and growth and permission to fail without actually failing and moving forward when things go wrong. It's just been an amazing experience and journey so far for me.
I love that. I think that that's incredible. And come sort of around race time, most people have some level of anxiety around races. When race day arrives, is that something you have to actively manage and deal with?
Yeah, I do. And it's quite significant for me to the point sometimes I don't actually know how I make it to the start line. And some races I've made it to the start line, and in the swim I've just been flooded with lactate because I've had so much anxiety. But I remember when I raced Kona this year, my coach, who's really an incredible man, sent me through a message. Brett Sutton, one of most athletes, you would recognise him, had written a blog about the paper tiger and facing your fear and taking a step towards it, otherwise you're forever going to be running away. And that really struck a significant chord with me. So since then I've been able to manage it a little bit better. And just to understand that you can take a step towards the fear instead of continually trying to walk away from it and, you know, to pat it down and to stand on top of it. If you walk towards it, it actually backs down. It's a really incredible, empowering feeling.
That's such a great metaphor, and I think it can be applied to everything within the sport. If there's parts that you're struggling with, whether it is anxiety or if you're struggling to improve one of your disciplines, it's you don't eat an elephant all at once. It's little bites at a time, and just as you say, facing your fear and one little step at a time really makes a massive difference. And it's that consistently doing that changes things.
I you couldn't have said it any better. And I think that consistency throughout Ironman is the magic bullet in every single part of it. It's the consistency of the application of what you do. It's a consistency of technique. It's a consistency of mindset, the consistency of effort, the consistency and regularity of your sessions. So you couldn't have said it any better.
Jodie, tell me a little bit about life outside of triathlon. You mentioned you've got kids. How do you keep that balance and all the balls in the air that need to be in the air? Because that gets to people as well, is just feeling that overwhelm that you're not able to sort of check all the boxes you need to check on a daily basis.
I am incredibly blessed. I work part-time. Part of my anxiety, there's always a really good thing about bad things, and the best thing about having anxiety is that you're a particularly organized kind of a person. That kind of takes the pressure off your anxiety. So I often remark to my husband that I spend all of today getting ready for tomorrow. So it just means that I'm just a little bit more organized. But I also have very good children, and they're a little bit older now, so it's much easier. They're now teenagers, so it's definitely much easier since they've grown. But when they were little, it was all just about incorporating triathlon into my lifestyle. So the children would sometimes ride me with me on their bikes when I went for a run, or they would swim alongside me in the pool when I was doing a training session in the pool. Sometimes when they were really little, I'd have to do my sessions around the block because I couldn't get away. So it's just about doing what you can and finding a way and working around, you know, the things that could possibly be obstacles, and just not seeing them as obstacles, just trying to figure out a way around them.
What do your kids think about Mum the Ironman? Has the magnitude of that sunk in yet?
I'm not quite sure. I think because they were probably around about 5 or 6, maybe a little bit older when I started. So from their memories, I think that I've kind of done it since they can actually remember. So it's just a part of what I do. So I don't think they think that I'm special, but I don't think I'm that special either. So I think it kind of comes down to that. They've definitely benefited in just enormous, enormous ways from my journey in this sport. I just can't fathom where they would be and how I would have raised them had I not decided to do this sport. It's just made such a difference to it with the whole family.
Are they showing inklings that one day maybe they want to do it?
No, but interestingly enough, my daughter did try. It's not really her thing. But one of the things my sport did do is encouraged her to try something different. So she now dances, and she started off with one genre. She's now doing four genres and dancing nearly every single day. So that's just one of the ways what I do has inadvertently shown her that she can give something a go and she can start from the beginning and progress. And she started really quite late, so she's had to work really hard to get better. And I think that watching me do that has encouraged her and given her some strength. So, you know, I often reflect that that's such a blessing as well.
Talk to me about Kona itself. And it's one thing doing an Ironman, but then getting the ambition to want to qualify for the World Champs. When was that seed planted?
Well, that's a very funny story, because I actually qualified for Kona by accident at Ironman Cairns.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
I was actually terrified, and I would have turned the spot down had my coach not said this is a once in a lifetime thing. It had never crossed my mind, and it was actually an event that I had never wanted to do because I was terrified of it. I'd heard terrible stories about how difficult it was and how windy it was and how hot it was, and I qualified quite early on and I was very inexperienced. I think I'd only done 3 Ironmen. I qualified on my 3rd, so I didn't really feel like I knew what I was doing. So my first year at Kona was a real learning experience, and I walked away not particularly happy with my performance there, but really motivated and really excited about everything I'd learned. And I listened to Tim Van Berkel in a podcast just yesterday, and he said that at Kona you need to do an apprenticeship. So you need to kind of do a couple of races there so that you can learn about it and you improve as you go. And he couldn't have said it any better than that, I don't think.
And it's funny you say that about the apprenticeship. I don't think that just applies to Kona. I think that applies to any Ironman race. It's been my experience as well. The first one, you go there just to make sure you don't die. You just want to finish the thing. And then you slowly go, you know what, I can get better at this. And after a few years of doing it, you start learning the ropes. And I think it's exactly the same, as you say, with racing on the Big Island, because the conditions are so different to what you would experience anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think I'm at the point now where I'm learning how to race the event. So it's exactly as you say, you start out wanting to finish and then you go, I can get a little bit better and I can get a little bit better. And then you start learning how to train more effectively and you just think, well, I might be able to race a little bit better and I might be able to actually start racing the Ironman instead of just finishing it. So, and that's exciting. Yeah.
So I take it you've got unfinished business on the Big Island, Joni?
Actually, I was really lucky. I qualified after Kona last year and I was disappointed. I actually had a really good race at the next Ironman I did, and I qualified again unexpectedly, but that time I was really excited to qualify and I really wanted to go back. So I went back to Kona this year and I had a really good race. Not the best race, not the race that, you know, everybody wants to have, you know, they want to leave everything out there, but I had a really good race. I finished well up the field in my age group. And I just felt like I had learned and conquered some fears. I was very frightened of the descents. I have flat training grounds here, completely flat. There's not a hill for 400 kilometres near where I live, so it's flat and windy. So to manage the descents down Harvey, it took a significant amount of courage to go back and face them again, and I did that this year. So I actually am really quite satisfied with my performance this year, but I would like to go back. That would be nice, and see if I can race it after my 2 attempts so far.
I was going to say that I'm glad you finished that saying that you would like to go back, because I think once it's in your blood, there's something special about Kona that once it's in your blood, you want to keep going back. In your mind, what makes that island so special, and what makes you want to go back all the time?
That's a very good question. For me, I think it's just knowing that I come from a really small country town and my coach lives here. He's not, you know, as professional triathlon coach. He's an Ironman who's just invests a lot of time in me, and my local community really support me. And I think it's just, I guess I'm proud that it's a reflection, like my participation in that event is a reflection of all of the people in my local community who've helped me get there. So I think it's a, pride really in that. So it's not, I'm not sure it's the island itself, though that's actually just an amazing thing. It's also conquering the conditions for me to continue to go back there and to get better and better at facing my fears on those descents is also something that excites me.
How do you sort of train the conditions? As you say, living where you live, there's not a hill as far as the eye can see where you are. It does get hot in Queensland. There's no two ways about that. But it's different. What do you do to sort of get yourself Kona ready in Queensland?
That's a good question. So in terms of the descents, for me, that was a battle that I had from 2016 to 2017. I really wasn't quite sure I was going to be able to manage them any better in 2016. And when I say I was frightened, I was literally terrified. I got the speed wobbles on the descent, or a couple of the descents, and that's a really frightening experience when you've got the speed wobbles and getting hit by Kona crosswinds. So to go back in 2017 and still not have any hills to train on and practice those descents was really quite confronting. But to answer your question, the only thing I could do was visualize. And the other thing I could do was to do a little bit of mindful work and to really work on just facing those fears. So in my mind, envisaging those descents and facing them, you know, seeing myself facing them, seeing myself successfully negotiate those descents. In terms of the physical training, it's a lot of indoor trainer work. So you can do strength work on the trainer. It's obviously hot out here, so we have a little bit of an advantage there, though we do train for Kona over our winter. So that's not necessarily a huge advantage for us because Kona is at the end of our winter, so we don't really get the summer heat to practice in.
Yeah, absolutely. If they would move it 6 months later, you'd be sorted.
We would be sorted. It was 46 degrees here yesterday, so we would be sorted for sure.
Wow, that is incredibly hot. Jody,
it is.
What's the biggest life lesson that Ironman as a sport has taught you?
It has taught me that failure is one of the best things that you can possibly do in life. It's taught me that there is so much opportunity in failure. That would be the biggest lesson. It's also taught me, and I know you only asked me for one, but it's taught me so many things. It's also taught me to take advantage of the opportunity in the lifetime of an opportunity. So that sounds really grand, but as you say, you go back to the elephant and it can be just as small as, you know, somebody said to you, do you want to be my swimming training partner for a little bit? And you go, yeah, I'll give it a go. Or you're in the middle of a training session and you want to quit with 5 seconds to go. And you think, no, I've got an opportunity to really push this out. So let's go the 5 seconds. So it's just keeping in mind that whole time and for your whole life. There's opportunity everywhere if you look for it. And it's okay to fail if you take an opportunity and you fail at it, because you'll learn something and you'll grow. And it's just the most amazing thought that failure is actually really not so bad.
It's amazing you say that, because there's the opposite of not taking that opportunity is the regret of wondering what would have happened if you didn't. And yours is a very cool story in that sense. Is what happened if you didn't say yes, I'll be your swimming partner? Where would you have been? What would you have done? And I mean, no one knows that answer, but We could have been, well, we wouldn't be chatting, first of all, but you could have been sitting down here 5-6 years later going, what if? And even though it may not at the time have been something you really were gung-ho about doing, it's taken you on a path that's helped you in many aspects, as you say, many aspects of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I reflect on that a lot, and I have a significant amount of gratitude to my coach and to all of the people who've helped me on my journey because of that. It's the gratitude is something that drives me daily, and it reflects throughout all of my sessions and all of my efforts and the amount of time I put in and the consistency. It comes back to gratitude for that opportunity and the way in which it's actually enhanced my life.
Let's talk some failure. Your sort of biggest, and this is a positive, obviously, your biggest failure in the sport, and what have you learned from it?
Oh, that's a very good question. My biggest failure. Wow, that stumped me. I've had lots of failures. You know, I had in my second Ironman was Port Macquarie, and I came off the bike about 10 minutes into the ride and I actually tore my AC joint, my shoulder. And I went on to finish the ride and then to run the marathon in a sling. So that was a failure because I obviously lacked bike handling skills. But it taught me that you can work your way around things. So I still managed to finish that event in really quite a competitive time for me. That was only my second event. So, but in terms of grand failures or small failures, I guess there's all types of things. You know, I've nutritionally a couple of times, you know, taken gels, got cramps, and that sabotaged my run. There are small things every day where you fail, you just mentally decide, you know, this is going to be a really tough session, so you kind of give up before you start, and you learn from that the next time around that it's really important to keep a positive mindset. So yeah, I'm not quite sure how to answer your question, to be honest.
What's next on the cards for Jodie Browning? What's your calendar look like in the immediate future?
I think this year it will just be Ironman Cairns in June, so I've started back this week just base training. Training is pretty consistent for me anyway, but from a program perspective, I just started back this week. So Cairns is still 6 months away, but I really enjoy the training, and it's such an important part of my life that it's just something that's kind of ongoing for me. So Cairns at this point, and perhaps Busselton in December.
Let's talk just briefly about sort of horses for courses. And I mean, Busselton's a fast flat route, very, very different to what you'd experience in Kona. Cairns, I believe, is a bit tougher. It's not as fast as Busso. What do you prefer? Do you like the tough ones, the fast flat? What's your favorite?
Look, definitely like the flat, simply because I train out here. So my strength is in the time trial bike. So that's what I train on out here all the time. It's flat and it's windy and there's no traffic lights. So when we go for a 6 hour ride, we ride for 6 hours and we ride flat and into the wind. Cairns, they're very different courses, as you say. They're very different. Cairns last year was challenging. Well, Cairns on each year has been challenging for me. It's rolling terrain, and I'm not used to the rolling terrain, no matter how much you train for that. You know, on a trainer, you're still not training 6 hours on rolling terrain. So that's a little bit different. That also has some hills, which has some descents, which challenges my bike handling skills and my fear and courage. So I think I get different things out of each race. There's certainly a bit more versatility at Cairns, so it keeps you a little bit more interested. And it challenges what I'm comfortable at. And that's, I guess, another lesson from this sport. I've learned to be excited by things that challenge my weaknesses. So I couldn't tell you, I prefer the flat in terms of my, you know, my physical strengths. But in terms of my preference for a course, I think I like to think that I just make do and do the best I can with whatever I'm presented with. So I don't really have a preference per se.
Brilliant. Well, Jodie, it's been great catching up. I could chat to you for days. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time out. Thanks for your time today on the Kona Edge.
Thank you, Brad, for the opportunity.
This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to thekonaedge.com/indoor. That's thekonaedge.com/indoor. And that's a wrap for this edition of the Kona Edge. We've got another awesome iTunes review in over the last day or so, and it comes from Jim in upstate New York. Jim, thank you so much for your iTunes review. It did definitely put a smile on my face. It says, absolute dynamite. This podcast is a stick of freaking dynamite. I've listened to every episode for the last 16 months and have taken away at least one piece of great advice from each one. Perfect for beginner triathletes and coaches alike. Jim from upstate New York, you are a freaking legend. Thank you so much for that iTunes review. It definitely made me smile. If you haven't left us one yet, please do. It literally only takes a couple of seconds of your time, and it really gives us a bump in the rankings on iTunes, which is one of the biggest podcasting platforms out there. So the more positive reviews we get, the higher iTunes ranks us, and the more people find the Kona Edge. So if you haven't hit subscribe yet, please do. We're back again tomorrow. We're going to be chatting some swimming. And I've got a very, very cool tip to share with you tomorrow from Julie Dunkel. You're not going to want to miss it. It's coming up tomorrow. Until then, from myself, Brad Brown, it's cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.
Don't forget, if you'd like to access the commercial-free feed of the Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/support, become a patron, and you'll get access to that feed right away.